"Sylvester was never in my employ," corrected Benjamin Augustus Clymer. The president of the Metropolis Trust Company was noted for his precision of speech. "During the winter of 1918, I shared an apartment with Judge James Hildebrand, who employed Sylvester." "Was Sylvester addicted to drink?" "No." "Was he quarrelsome?" "No." "Was Sylvester married at that date?" At the question, a faint smile touched the corners of Clymer's clean-shaven mouth, and his eyes traveled involuntarily toward the overdressed female whose charge of assault and battery against her husband had brought Clymer to the police court as a character witness in Sylvester's behalf.
"Sylvester left Judge Hildebrand to get married," he explained. "He was a model clerk, honest, sober, and industrious." "That is all, Mr. Clymer."
The assistant district attorney spoke in some haste.
"You may retire, sir."
And as Clymer turned to vacate the witness box, he addressed the presiding judge. Clymer did not catch his remarks as, on stepping down, he was buttonholed by a man whose entrance had occurred a few minutes before through the swing door which gave exit from the space reserved for witnesses and lawyers into the body of the courtroom.
"Sit over here a second," the newcomer said in an undertone, indicating the long bench under the window. "Has Miss McIntyre been here?" "Miss McIntyre here?"
Clymer stared in amazement at his questioner.
"No, certainly not."
"Don't be so positive," retorted the lawyer heatedly, his color rising at the other's incredulous tone. "Helen McIntyre telephoned me to meet her, and, by Jove, here she comes," as a slight stir at the back of the courtroom caused him to glance in that direction. A gray-haired patrolman, cap in hand, was in the lead of a small procession which filed up the aisle, and Clymer gazed in astonishment at Helen McIntyre and her twin sister Barbara. What had brought them at that hour to the police court? The courtroom was filled with men, both white and black, while a dozen or more slatternly Negro women were seated here and there. The assistant district attorney's plea for a postponement of the Sylvester case on the ground of the absence of an important witness, and the granting of his plea, was entirely lost on the majority of those in the courtroom, their attention being wholly centered on Helen McIntyre and Barbara, whose bearing and clothes spoke of a fashionable and prosperous world to which nearly all present were utterly foreign. Barbara, sensitive to the concentrated regard which their entrance had attracted, drew closer to Dr. Amos Stone, their family physician, who had accompanied them on her particular request. Except for Mrs. Sylvester, she and her sister were the only white women in the room. Before they could take the seats to which they had been ushered, the clerk's stentorian tones sent the girls' names echoing down the courtroom, and Barbara, much perturbed, found herself standing with Helen before the clerk's desk. There was a moment's wait, and the deputy marshal, who had motioned to one of the prisoners sitting in the cage to step outside, emphasized his order with a muttered imprecation to hurry. A slouching figure finally shambled past him and stopped some little distance from the group in front of the judge's bench.
"Housebreaking," announced the clerk. "Charge brought by—"
He looked up at the two girls. "Miss Helen McIntyre," answered one of the twins composedly, "daughter of Colonel Charles McIntyre of this city."
"Charge brought by Miss Helen McIntyre," continued the clerk, "against—"
and his pointed finger indicated the seedy-looking man slouched before them.
"Smith,"
said the latter, and his husky voice was barely audible.
"Smith," repeated the clerk. "First name—"
"John," was the answer, given after a slight pause.
"John Smith, you are charged by Miss Helen McIntyre with housebreaking. What say you, guilty or not guilty?"
The man shifted his weight from one foot to the other and shot an uneasy look about him.
"Not guilty," he responded.
At that instant, Helen caught sight of Benjamin Clymer and his companion, Philip Rochester, and her pale cheeks flushed faintly at the lawyer's approach. He had time for but a hasty handshake before the clerk administered the oath to the prisoner and the witnesses in the case. Rochester walked back and resumed his seat by Clymer. Propping himself in the corner made by the bench and the cage, inside of which sat the prisoners, he opened his right hand and unfolded a small paper. He read the brief penciled message it contained, not once, but a dozen times. Folding the paper into minute dimensions, he tucked it carefully inside his vest pocket and glanced sideways at Clymer. The banker hardly noticed his uneasy movements as he sat regarding Helen McIntyre, standing in the witness box. Although paler than usual, the girl's manner was quiet, but Clymer, a close student of human nature, decided she was keeping her composure by willpower alone, and his interest grew. The judge, from the bench, was also regarding the handsome witness and the burglar with close attention.